Welcome. Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, and thank you for tuning into Voices for Excellence. I'm your host, Dr. Michael Connor, CEO and founder of the Agile Evolutionary Group. And today's guest has been a longtime personal friend of mine. I'm talking about when I was a chief academic officer, when I was an assistant superintendent, when I was a superintendent, I got the honor to sit on his panels. I got the honor to be on his podcast. And he is just an amazing, amazing soul. We were just talking and, you know, he's going from Kansas to, you know, all over the United States. Because he's in demand because everybody wants to hear his message. And I am just so happy to have Tom Murray on Voices for Excellence. It's such an honor to have him here. Tom Murray is currently the Director of Innovation for Future Ready Schools. But, you know, that work that he's doing there is a project of the Alliance for Excellence Education. That work is really turning teaching and learning systems, turning teaching and learning structures into futuristic teaching and learning organizations where our students are engaged. It undercovers and underpins what is exactly in the AC stage of education. And also, I don't know if everybody knows, but Tom Murray, he was my inspiration for my book. I remember Tom, he would personally send me hand messages, his book to my house, and I will never forget that. I still owe you a book, Tom, and I'm gonna do the same thing. So Tom, welcome to Voices for Excellence, my friend. How are you, brother?
Oh, my man, I gotta tell you, in that first part of that intro, I'm thinking, am I the right guest on? Is he actually talking about me? Is this the guy that he means? Like, man, that's a pretty good shout out. I'm like, wait, is that, am I in demand? Wow, that's incredible. I appreciate you, my brother. What an honor it is. It's been an honor to watch your journey, the incredible work that you've led in districts and now that you're doing nationally. So thank you so much for having me on the podcast. I appreciate you, respect the work you're doing tremendously, and what an honor it is to be here. So thanks for having me.
Oh man, Tom, I tell you, you know, for you just to even say it's an honor to be on Voices for Excellence. I really want to stop the recording right now because that's a mic drop. If Tom Murray says it is an honor to be on my podcast, that's a mic drop, everybody. But Tom, brother, it is so good to see you. I can't wait to see you in person again. But let's dig right into the questions because, again, you know, my audience, right, they use this as an asynchronous function of learning that they can go back anytime that they want. And when I think of Hattie's work, right, direct instruction 0.6, right, the effect size of impact on achievement. And when I think of that from andragogy, right, adult learning, I look at this as where they can apply that as a method of direct instruction. So Tom, feel free, anything that you need to be able to share our audience. I mean, I got to engage with you when you came and you opened up for my district when I was a superintendent. And it was one of the most motivational speeches I've heard in a while. I mean, when I think of it, right, I think of you, I think of Joe DiFilippo, I think of Inky Johnson, you know, those are the individuals, but to have you on here, yes, my listeners are going to keep on playing this back. So let's jump right into it. So,
all right, no pressure then. No pressure with all that you just said. Try and bring some words of inspiration that make sense today. Then there we go. Let's go.
Let's do this. So, Tom, this is a fun question, right? And I actually cannot wait to hear what your response is for this, right? But when people hear you, Tom, nationally, and you are sought after nationally, and when I'm sitting in the seat, right, listening to Tom Murray, and you actually moved me many of times, right? But when you're keynoting, speaking nationally, or leading a session with district level leaders with your work for Future Ready Schools, what song comes to mind when they see Mr. Tom Murray? Now, Tom. My song, right, is Super Bad by James Brown.
Okay? I love it.
When people see me walking, I want them to think of instantly James Brown, Super Bad. But what is your equity song that describes you as an educator and change agent in the AC stage of education?
It's probably not the best. I'm going to pull two my way because the first one, I'm going to say the first thing that came to mind because it makes me want to laugh. I wanted to say staying alive. Like, that's the first thing that comes to mind, right?
It describes crazy, right
crazy
now.
Crazy out there, right? Like, have we seen board meetings? Have we seen the chaos, right? And so, no, I say that tongue in cheek just because it just, you know, working with so many superintendents, so many principals, just seeing the chaos of our world, you know, and everything that's been going on. That's kind of my first one, tongue in cheek there. But I would say, in all seriousness, I would say, don't stop believing by journey.
Yes. Yes.
I'm a huge, huge believer in hope, in inspiration, and the need to recognize like all the things that we do have. You know, Mike, I believe that when we get up in the morning, we got to choose our lens each day. Like when I got up this morning, I could choose to see all the negativity in our world, all the chaos in our world, and it's plentiful. I mean, open up any news app and that's all you're going to see. But when I got up this morning as well, I can choose to see the greatness. And when I say that, I don't mean that we, you know, ignore the nonsense that's out there, because a lot of it really needs to be addressed. But what I'm saying is, I think it's important that we choose our lens. And so I am not going to stop believing, because I believe in people. I believe in the human capital that's working in our schools. I believe in the brilliance that I get to see yesterday in Ohio, Monday in Kansas, Wednesday in Tennessee, you know. And so for me, it's don't stop believing, because I believe the moment that we do, the moment that we throw our hands up, the moment that we lose that hope, it's kids that lose out, and their future is far too valuable to allow that to happen. So Mike, don't stop believing.
Absolutely. Now, I'll tell you, Tom, staying alive, I would have stuck with that one, right? Because when you started identifying some of those key variants that flow up to the staying alive, right? The board meetings, boards, the politics, right? The politicization of education that we see now, but don't stop believing, you're right? Because if you stop believing, who's going to be mostly impacted is our babies, our kids. Yeah. And we have to continue to focus on greatness, right? And move beyond that. But we really can't stop believing, especially now in the AC stage of education, the first typical year since 2018, 2019. But I want to start underscoring that, right? That don't stop believing and for Kids for Greatness with your current work, right? As the Director of Innovation for Future Ready Schools, right? And to my audience, this is a specific project, and I'll have Tom elaborate more in depth with it, but it is a project that's out of the Alliance for Excellent Education, right? So Tom, in its simplest form for my audience tonight, how is Future Ready Schools, right, and your work changing the trajectory of student outcomes across America, but more importantly, how is it now changing the mindset that we do have to do something fundamentally different so we won't stop believing in our kids?
Yeah, I love that. I think the key word that you just said there is mindset, right? You know, when we look at Future Ready, President Obama kicked it off at the White House back in 2014. We had about 100 superintendents there at the White House sign on to what we call the Future Ready Pledge. And, you know, we're not naive pretending that a pledge changes things, but it was a public way to say, like, we believe in these core tenets. We believe in these pieces of change related to what we deem the Future Ready framework. And so really at its core, we're leveraging these evidence-based approaches to shift systems, shift practices by building leadership capacity, amplifying the stories, leveraging evidence and research that's out there, maintaining an equity focus, and really try and support those that are leading the way. Now, I'm not going to pretend that we're doing this all by ourselves as one organization. We partner with lots of great organizations that are out there. There's lots of great organizations doing incredible work, you know, and I believe together we're going to be stronger for kids. We try to keep a practitioner lens. You know, Doc, you were one of our advisors as, you know, working through that as this visionary, somebody that we respected, somebody doing the work on the ground. And so we want to be very practitioner focused. The last thing schools need right now is this 50,000 foot view, never having been there, never having done it, telling educators what to do. Like, that's the last thing we need. So very practitioner focused. People like you, Susan Enfield, Myerlin Stiles, like folks that are just crushing it on the ground to show people here's what works. Because what happens is, and just having worked, you know, in systems throughout until a number of years ago to lead Future Ready, it's easy to look around and start to make excuses. It's easy to look around and just hear the echo chambers of a single cabinet or whatever it might be, and say, you know, well, we can't do that because we're small and rural. We can't do that because we're an urban district. We can't do that because we're a high school district. We can't. And then we look an hour away and there's a place with very similar demographics or even higher need that's crushing what we're saying we can't do. And so part of it is to break down some of those barriers. And when we look at breaking down barriers, that's multifaceted. It's the barriers that are often between districts. You know, newspapers want to pit districts against each other that border. How do we break down some of those borders so I care just as much about the kids in the district next door as that I do about my own? So we can look at sharing professional learning. We can look at sharing best practices, because if they're getting better and that can help us, we want to get better too. Breaking down barriers also is within departments, within a district. I mean, how many times are districts, the left hand doesn't know what the right hand doing, and the tech department's pointing at the curriculum department and vice versa. And so part of that is breaking down to flatten some of those barriers, because the internal struggles that we have get in the way of what we can do for kids. And of course, for me, the biggest facet of breaking down barriers are the systemic inequities that we've had in so many different ways, in so many different systems, the injustice that have occurred. And so when we're an equity-focused organization, we want to prioritize those students that truly need it most, those students that have had the least amount. You know, Arne Duncan, former Secretary of Ed, used to say all the time how zip codes can no longer predetermine the educational outcomes. And so part of Future Ready is to amplify some of those stories. In the past 2 to 3 weeks, I've been in multiple districts, 100% free and reduced lunch. And here's the thing, they've got every excuse, every barrier out there to throw their hands up and say, you know, we don't have enough money. Our educational, the parent education levels are here. But here's the thing, they're not making excuses. And they're saying, we got high expectations for every kid, and we're going to do whatever it takes, and we're going to shift systems. We're going to educate parents to help educate their kids to do whatever it takes. And so they're not making excuses, and they're looking at it and saying, here's how we want to shift this system to give our kids the skills needed to leverage and break the chains of poverty to do what they can do, because they are brilliant children with beautiful smiles that need every opportunity that those in the suburbs have, that those other ones do as well. And so Future Ready, equity focused, leveraging the tools, the resources, lots of different things that we can to amplify stories, amplify great things that are happening, to give others hope as well. And by the way, as a bipartisan nonprofit, we don't sell anything. People are always like, what's the catch? What's the bottom line? What are you trying to sell us? You know, is this about iPads? Is this about Chromebooks? No, that's not it. We raise a lot of money to do what we do across the country. And with that, we've also gained a lot of trust, which is a good feeling, because people know this isn't, you know, we'll just buy this one little system over here and you can be Future Ready too. You know, for $20 a month, you can be Future Ready too. That's not how we work. And right. So, you know, with that, it's great work happening across the country. So thanks for the shout.
Tom, no, I wanted to highlight the work of Future Ready Schools, because one, you know, serving as a Future Ready advisor has just been absolutely just phenomenal, just having deep discussions around the Future Ready framework. And full disclosure, Tom knows, when I was a superintendent, my first strategic operating plan, one of my strategies and the goal of the strategic operating plan, it was systemically aligned to the Future Ready framework and the elements and the core tenets in that. So we were actually building the infrastructure of our technology system so it would be integrated into the academic context, i.e. what Tom highlighted about silo systems and the internal barriers that can be able to create, I like to say, educational inertia, where now expectations are lowered because the systems are not meeting the needs of the kids. And one thing around my framework too that you highlighted, Tom, high expectations, right? High expectations for kids and everything. So Tom, the work that you're doing with Future Ready Schools, the Future Ready framework has really just had this cataclysmic impact in a positive context on sharing best practices in it. And your example that you used, right? Oh, we don't have, you know, nobody near us can, you know, we can replicate these best practices. Future Ready will find them for you. And that is the best thing about it. And that connectivity to share and disseminate best practices is one thing that I marvel at the work that's coming out of Washington with your group, Tom. So thank you for that. I want to say, I mean, I can't speak for every superintendent, but when I was a superintendent, Tom, Future Ready framework, just having that natural conversation with superintendents across the country is something that I was very appreciative of Future Ready School. So thank you for that, Tom. But Tom, let's get into a fun question, right? And to my audience out there, full transparency, I remember when I started the book journey, last year about this time, and I called Tom up. And I remember, Tom, I don't know if you remember this conversation, Tom, but I called you up. I said, Tom, I'm thinking about writing a book. He said, do it. No, what was the word she said? No, you said, go do it. Go for it. That's what it was. Go for it. And you got me pumped up to write that book. And Tom, here we are a year later. My book got published, Intentional, Bold, and Unapologetic, A Guide to Transforming Schools in the AC Stage of Education. So thank you for that. But Tom, your books, I'm trying to get to your status. I want to be like you when I grow up. Best-selling books, not one, not two, but three times over. And I think Personal and Authentic actually was a national bestseller, right? So the third book, that's kind of like that LeBron James, like, okay, Cleveland, Miami, back to Cleveland. Let me get a championship in LA. But your book's top, Leading Professional Learning. One of my favorite books, Learning Transformed. I love that book, Tom. Personal Authentic, you blew it out of the box. Love that too. All three of them, Tom. I can't put them on like which one I like best, but Learning Transformed was more my that academic type. I love that. But they've all been bestsellers, Tom. And the industry, the contributions that you've had to this in our industry has just been absolutely phenomenal to the ecosystem. So with regards to each of the mega themes from your books, how do you address these important elements now? If I'm a superintendent leader, but I'm in this new dimension, i.e. the AC stage of education post-COVID, how can I use your books to be able to guide my leadership now, or to guide me as a principal, or even to guide my design as a teacher in the AC stage of education when the needs now are fundamentally different?
Yeah, I love that question. And thank you so much for the shout out. I appreciate that. And for Learning Transformed, I would say, I got to give a shout out to my buddy, Eric Scheninger, my co-author on that. Yes. And for anybody listening, any part of Learning Transformed that you didn't like, that's the part that Eric wrote. I just need to let you know that. All right, I wrote the part.
Eric Scheninger. I did not tell him to say that. Eric, I did not tell him to say that. That is not me, brother. I still love you.
So I got to give my boy a shout out, you know. And it's interesting because sometimes people will comment that read, and you kind of alluded to it too, Learning Transformed and Personal and Authentic, because they're very different books. Yes, Learning Transformed, Eric and I got together. You see, we've been working across the country with cabinets, with, you know, just admin teams, and just seeing so many of the same types of issues, yet many districts overcoming some of those issues, and put our heads together and say, like, what are the big themes that we're looking at? And it was a lot of research. I mean, we almost took almost 2 years to write that book. Wow. Because we were doing all sorts of research on everything from leadership. Like, what does effective leadership look like? And so when we took something like leadership, that's a word like we talk about all the time, but line up 10 principles, ask them what effective leadership looks like, and watch you get 10 different responses. You're going to get some overlap, but we wanted to really look at, like, what does leadership look like? And so one piece to that, and Mike, I know you're so good at this as well, is looking outside of education. So when we really were researching effective leadership, we started with people like Simon Sinek, John Maxwell, people that have devoted their lives to the evidence around the leadership, and certainly brought it to schools as well, but really looking at, like, what does high quality leadership actually look like from research? And then what does it look like in practice? And so for Learning Transformed, it was very much research to practice was our theme. What does the evidence say? What does it look like happening in schools? And then let's spotlight a place. And then the next chapter. So we really created these 8 keys to designing tomorrow's schools today. You know, first one being around leadership and culture, lay the foundation. Listen, working with so many districts across the country, I have never one time walked into a district, they're crushing it and doing amazing things, and then they have lackluster leadership. I've never seen that, ever seen that. But I've walked in some of the poorest places in our country and been completely blown away by the things that are happening, the skills that kids are learning, the opportunities that they have connected to the world of work. It's all because of the leadership. And it's about creating cultures where people want to be. And so we really focused on that. That book was really written for kind of higher level admin. I'm not surprised at all for you. That's your connection, because it was much more academic, over 100 research studies that were connected to that on that. But then the flip side here too is this is like, and I connect for me because it's really both. It's not an either or. It's know your audience, right? The Learning Transformed really being that systems changed, big picture. And it's funny because as an author sometimes, but especially when that was first released and working with a lot of districts, I'd have somebody say, you know, hey, Tom, you're going to come work with our district. I want to get a copy for, you know, all my elementary teachers. And they've never heard this from an author, but I'm like, okay, hold on, hit pause. That's not the audience. No. And they look at me like, what author tells us not to buy the book? And I'm like, you as an admin team, you look at it first, because it's not, here's your tools for second grade. Here's your, it's not your lower level stuff. And I say all that with the understanding that, listen, I love my teachers. It is not knocking them at all, but this isn't about like classroom instructional strategies, how to close a lesson. Like, it's not that at all. This is more systems changing big picture pieces. But what I really connected to as well, and part of looking back at Learning Transformed, what I didn't do a whole lot of was kind of the narrative and the story and more of the inspirational pieces. That is kind of this manuscript. I know, shout out to Randy Watson, the commissioner in Kansas. They used Learning Transformed and parts of it as the roadmap for their state in education in terms of some of the core pillars that they really wanted to put out there. Where I wanted to, when I wrote Personal Authentic, also speak to people's hearts, because here's the reality. It's not just the academic and the high level pieces. It's also, you've got to keep the people with you. And so in Personal Authentic, I really leverage vulnerability. You know, my, I probably do 80, 90 events a year. So I get to do a lot of different things. And I committed a number of years ago, I was about to lead a session, and it really hit me. I was about to lead a workshop, and in my workshop, I had three superintendents of the year for their state in the last like 2 years or so in my workshop, ready to learn from me. And I was like, what in the world am I going to talk to these folks that they haven't been there, lived it, crushed it, put it out there, and they're ready down to take some notes? And I share that because it was ridiculously humbling. And what it hit me was, man, I need to come at this with extreme vulnerability, humility, and recognizing you don't have all the answers. And somebody that's going to say they've got all the answers, run the other direction. And so in Personal Authentic and connected to speaking, I committed that I will never stand on a stage or in a book, pat myself on the back and tell people how well I did something. Because here's why. It's so easy to step back and be like, well, yeah, if I had that superintendent, I could have done that too. If we had that principal, I could have done that too. If we had that funding, if we were a suburban district, if we were, like, you come up with every excuse you can. However, here's the flip side. What I've learned is when we keep it real and we're vulnerable, and I talk about with team leaders, I was working with the cabinet just the other day, 20 cabinet members, large district, great folks. And I led with, I know how hard the struggle can be as a leader when you mess up. When you make the call on your cabinet team, your department's looking at you and you totally screwed it up. Because when you lead with vulnerability and you lead with humility, what I've recognized is people are much more able to follow because they want to, because they say, you know, this, they look at it, this person's being real. This person's not coming in as a know-it-all that just says, just do it this way and it'll be perfect. The human side matters. And so in Personal and Authentic, I tell many more stories. And this is, you know, I've had superintendents do book studies on it, and I've had kindergarten teachers do book studies on it. And as an author, that was the goal of how do you write a book that's just as relevant for even school board members as it is for that first year kindergarten teacher? Because those are vastly different audiences with different hats. And to me, the only way you can do that is speak to their heart. And so being able to leverage some vulnerability time where it was my mindset that was off that people can connect with, but then also show them here's what's possible. The other people, things that I'll connect to that, that I think going back to your question about advice for leaders, that I was really intentional in both books, especially in Personal and Authentic. You know, Personal and Authentic, I have over 100 different voices that are just connected throughout the book with just these tips, like here's how you do it, just practical ideas, practical thoughts, because I also wanted it to be very practical for teachers, principals, and so on and so forth. But here's the key. Is I was intentional about amplifying other people's voices that were different than mine. When I look at the framework around Personal and Authentic that I had created, and one of them was around, just to give you one example here, was around cultural relevance and how do we create things that are more personal, more authentic in nature. As a white male, I recognize that's not my story to tell. I can talk about data. I can talk about high-level stuff, and I will support it till the day I die. Like, don't stop believing, right? But here's the thing. I connected with one of my close friends, Dr. Rosa Perez Isaiah, an amazingly brilliant leader in California. And I'm like, Rosa, I know your story. Would you like to talk about part of your story and your thoughts as a Hispanic female leader coming to the country when you did, speaking no English, growing up in poverty, and that's all part of her story that she shares. I'm like, that was not my world. And I don't have a true understanding of that. I'll work towards it all the time. But at the end of the day, when I step back, I really don't know what it's like to be in those shoes. And so with that, it was an opportunity to really amplify the voices of people that see the world differently, that understand things different, because their story and the way that they share is going to be far greater than in a way that I can talk about it, because I don't really have the experience with some of those things. You know, when I wrote the section on equity, it's an area that I've worked nationally for a long period of time, but connecting with one of my closest friends, Ken Shelton, a Black male that worked in LAUSD, we lived on opposite sides of the country, right? Have very different life experiences, but together with our voices, it's going to be much stronger than if it's just Tom Murray. And so part of those pieces, and I guess going back to connecting the books to advice for leaders, is if you're going at this alone or you're just looking at it through your own mindset, you're going to fail. Yeah. I don't know how else to say it. As good as you are, as experienced as you are, as brilliant as you are, as a leader, if you're not amplifying the voices of other people and seeking out people that see the world differently, whether that's race, whether that's religion, whether that's just experience, whatever it might be, you are creating an environment and a vacuum where you're going to see and like things that are very similar to you. But let's face it, no matter who you are, the world's a lot different than just you as an individual. And so I think that's an area, just to be totally vulnerable, that I've grown a lot personally in the last, say, even 10, 12 years. Because I will vulnerably say, I think sometimes when I was a principal, I had some blinders on. There were things that I missed, experiences that I missed, kids that I was working with that I truly didn't understand. And so the opportunity sometimes to step back, to tap into other voices, other knowledge, other skill set. And by the way, when you do, and they say something that when they disagree with you because they're pushing back on something, don't be mad. You asked. You want their viewpoint, let them have it, right? Yeah. And so I think between learning, transform, personal, authentic, amplifying the stories, amplifying the voices, getting that diversity and lenses out there will only make us stronger. So as leaders, make sure you're hearing from lots of folks, even those that dissent. So if you're about to roll something out and you know somebody over here is like, no way, worst thing in the world, don't just write them off. Don't just call them names in the cabinet meeting. Pull them in here. Because you know what? Maybe they've got some pieces of advice that may save it in the long run because they're seeing something that you're not, right? And so pulling those voices in, because every voice matters. And just a huge advocate of making sure that we pass the mic sometimes as well. You know, I get a lot of opportunities, a lot of stages, and I recognize fully that it's not always my story to tell. And sometimes it's my job to pass the mic, amplify the voices when you have a platform. And that's important in leadership too.
Yeah, Tom, thank you for that, because you are right? The nerdy side of me absolutely just loves learning transform. Tom, I still got your book signed, and tell you the truth, I got another book so I can just purposely mark up from learning transform.
Well, the only reason, Mike, that I sign it is so that you don't go sell it on eBay and make a few bucks off the one. That's the only reason I signed it. Now you can't sell it, you know?
You know, eBay tomorrow, right?
It's worth less now than it was the day you bought it, right?
But Tom, I tell you, and this is why I love you to death, brother, because learning transformed and personal and authentic fits under the auspice of the ecosystem, but they're two contrasting books, but they hit on pivotal points within the education ecosystem. I just love the fact that you said amplifying the voices of others, speak to people's heart and leverage and lead with vulnerability. Wow. But I think that that has to be a non-negotiable in the AC stage of education, right? This leadership of ensuring that we're designing when I think about design thinking, the first core tenet in design thinking is what? Empathy. And when you think of empathy, you think of you have to what? Design towards your customers. Who are your customers? Your families, your parents, your students, teachers, everything, right? And leading with vulnerability is so important right in the AC stage of education, Tom, you're absolutely right. The human side matters. And just how you went in depth with personal authentic, I knew about that with you and Ken. And then also everybody just giving you, Tom just already just unleashed the big secret for our next episode. We will have Dr. Rosa Perez Isaiah after Tom. So Tom gave you a little of the pretext to what you're going to hear in depth in a few weeks when we release Dr. Perez Isaiah's episode with that. So,
Well, Mike, you can say then I will officially go on record and say that this is the JV podcast, the varsity podcast. You got to listen to varsity podcast is coming up next week. So Rosa, you rock, my friend. Love her leadership and just her as an individual. What an amazing person. Mike, let me jump on one other piece if I could for just
30 seconds. Please.
We just released at Future Ready this human-centered design process that we call it's the Future Ready Learner Profile. Just released it, completely free tool that it leverages a human-centered design process. We worked with the Luma Institute. They have this looking, understanding, and making, like these three tenets of kind of human-centered design. Because what you just started to talk about, empathy, but understanding your community and all those pieces. How many times do we make decisions for people without their voices recognized? Wow. And so in this profile, what they do, you know, we can create things like the graduate profile has been around for a really long time. And when we started looking at like, do we want to kind of create a future ready version? What would that look like? What are the skills necessary? And when we started to work with really innovative folks, they started to say, what if you created a process to pull the core values from districts, from communities, what they value, and then intersect it with the framework to create these new and different ideas. And so what happens is we've created this process that leverages and amplifies the voice of the entire community, all the stakeholders that you bring in. Doesn't matter if you're a board member or a superintendent or a student or a business owner, bringing that in to really pull down, what do we value as a community? What does that look like? And here's the other piece. Sometimes when you have something like a profile of graduate, I think it's a great tool. It absolutely is. However, do first grade teachers see the value in themselves in that process? Quite often it's, is that kind of a high school thing? And not knocking that at all. But what we did is create a process that could say, well, what does a future ready first grader look like? By the end of first grade, how would you use it? And so it's a tool that you can use it as a graduate type profile. You can use it for strategic planning. You can use it though to say, hey, by the time they leave our middle school, what do we want this to look like? And so it's not just focused on graduation. Graduation, we've put so much emphasis on that as like, that's the end point. And the kind of funny part is that's actually part of the beginning.
Right.
So when we look at it like that, part of our process and some of the last steps are envisioning, okay, a graduate of our district 10 years from now is uber successful. What does that look like?
Right.
What's their job look like? What are they as a human being valuing, looking like, happiness? Right. And so it really goes beyond. So I want to give a shout out to the new learner profile, completely free tool. There's slide decks, there's tools, there's a process that places can use. Encourage places to check that out because that goes hand in hand with what you were just talking about.
Absolutely. And you heard it first here on Voices for Excellence. Tom, just for my audience, how would they be able to retrieve the actual profile or to move forward with this? Because you know, I haven't, and Tom, thank you, because I think I've had many conversations, but you're really one of the only individuals that I've really talked to, or we speak about education. And if we're looking at, you know, the portrait of a graduate, right? We always, that's kind of like that standard. And like you said, that yes, that is the beginning, but I've never heard educators or collectively defining, we always say, what does a graduate look like? But you just said something that I haven't heard. What does the end of a first, or if you complete first grade, what does that look like for a first grader, right? And I think that we need to take, we know in 10 years, but taking that step within that and designing the profile, using it, the multi-adaptiveness for strategic planning, everything, that is so cool, Tom. So where could my audience actually get that?
Awesome. I appreciate that. So I encourage you to check out futureready.org/profile and it'll walk through that process. Lots of things. We just released it this week. We've got other versions that are going to be coming up. I want to give a shout out to the Readiness Institute through Penn State. We partnered with them. They're doing incredible work. Justin Alio, and then we partnered with them on that. So, so proud of it.
But, Tom, what I really like that you had said, right, with, and I think that innovation, sometimes the definition of innovation can be misconstrued, but one of the core elements of the definition of innovation is creative solutions by borrowing from different industries so that you can be able to address those persistent problem practices within your own industry. And when you had that extensive research with our mutual friend, Eric's great, shout out to Eric Scheniger, with Learning Transformed. But when I look at kind of like this association with my book, and I'm like, wow, I didn't realize Tom and Eric went that in depth, but when I look at, you know, the construction of my book, you know, really looking at the premises of, or the theories of, you know, Clay Christensen, Daniel Kahneman, you know, systems one, systems two thinking, Richard Elmore's work being disrupted, Atul Gawande, Michael Tushman, I start thinking about them like, wow, that is a conglomerate of innovation to disrupt education. And that is what you're doing. And that's what Future Ready is doing. But moving into the next question, right, with regards to what we were kind of outlining, right, innovation in education, but we know that there are multiple constraints, right? These constraints are multi-adaptive, there's a level of multifunctionality too, and different aspects or variants within the systems and structures of our teaching and learning organization. So from a Future Ready school standpoint, right, the reimagination of the education model in the AC stage of education, one of the core constraints, I always say, is that it's our bottleneck, right? Just to be honest, is when we look at policies and local governance. And I'm not saying this in a negative context, but I'm just looking at how some of the policies that are currently being underscored right now, we're seeing districts moving towards implementing equity and excellence policies. But if you look at some of the policies that are in place at the local level, those are constraints to advance equity, i.e. Black and brown students. I just wrote a blog and it's called Separate and Not Equal, right? It's a process to strategically disrupt pathways in our high schools, because roughly only about 30% as a cumulative for Black and brown students in high schools only get advanced rigor, right? I.e. IB courses, AP courses, but they represent 50% of public education. Right. So when you have 50% of public education, Black and brown, 9% Black students and 21% Latino students that are in advanced placement classes, IB courses, I really think that's a policy constraint. I think that is a LEA constraint. But more importantly, we're seeing this on a national level. And this time is based off of Ed Truss's research in 2020. So Tom, how could now, right? I know you're doing this and you're going overtime with this. I see it, Tom. But from your Future Ready perspective, how do we disrupt those policies that are inhibiting Black and brown students or marginalizing specific student groups in education?
So the cynical side of me wants to come out like it did in that first question, give you a one response answer and say, vote would be the first thing. So, but I'm going to dive further into that if I could. All right.
Best answer ever on Voices for Excellence. Right. But go ahead, my brother.
Right. That's the biggest thing that's on there. Cause let's be real. There are absolutely those out there in legislatures that are completely against. I mean, when we see states and bills being put in that say, like, if you use the word equity, like you can be fine, whatever was going on in Wisconsin. Like you see things happening in Florida, like all the nonsense that's out there. So on one hand, I would say, let me talk about it from an individual, control the controllables. Because if I focus 1,000% on all those pieces, I will literally drive myself insane because they are nuts. Number two, though, is we can't stick our head in the mud and pretend that there's no problems out there. There are very real problems out there. So we need to make sure that we're advocating. And so with that, collectively, your voices are so amazingly strong. It is why I believe organizations need to rally their members, bring people together to stand up for what's right. For me, at the end of the day, if I'm going to put my head on the pillow, I need to know that, okay, I'm not going to just sit back and say, okay, this rule over here, laws over here is going to say this. So, okay, we're not going to do that for our students. I'm going to say, no, sometimes it's looking at it and say, okay, if that's the box we're in, how do we rearrange the box so we can still do the work that we need to do? Maybe we're calling it something different. I mean, let's be real. And sometimes in some places, because sometimes I'm in the reddest areas in the country, sometimes I'm in the bluest areas of the country. There's times where I'll talk and say, listen, I know some of you have a struggle with the word equity, but I'm going to reframe it for you. Let's talk about access for kids and opportunity for kids. Mm-hmm. And it's fascinating for me. Oh yeah, you know, we're totally fine with that. And I want to whack some people upside the head. And I'm like, that's what we're talking about, right?
Tom, full disclosure. I'm sorry, I got to interject because, and this was when I was in the process of developing the Disruptive Excellence Framework. And I had a completely different name for it, but all the feedback that I got, right, it was change equity and put in excellence because this is more national now. And it took me a while to be able to really fully understand that, because I'm like, well, we have to create access and opportunity for kids anyway. But they're like, equity and excellence. If you use excellence, everybody want excellence for kids.
Right. Yep.
And I was like, but it shouldn't be polarized. They're like, we know, right. Just change it. But you're right, right? You're saying the same thing, but using a different word. Right. Tom, please continue. Thank you, brother.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. And I love your segment on that. And I'm thinking about, you know, part of it's also as well is that, you know, just even my initial like kind of vote, like it's easy to become divisive like that real quick. But at the end of the day, part of what a strategy for leaders to thinking about is, you know, and I see the best superintendents, the best principals doing this, is pull that other side in the best that we can. Now, if we're talking like a federal law, I get it. It's a far greater struggle, but why does that person believe so passionately what they believe? Because, you know, we can be so passionate about the things we're talking about, and there's somebody on the other side that's so passionate on the other side of it. And so sometimes it's stepping back and have the humility to say, okay, I'm going to let my guard down a little bit. I'm going to take a breath, and I'm going to have a conversation. Tell me more about that. Mm-hmm. Tell me why you see it that way. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of times these conversations, as somebody hears equity, I'm here, somebody maybe that looks like me is hearing like, oh, what I hear in that is you're going to take away from me to give to somebody else. Right. And that's the first like, wow, that's what you're no can do. And like having a conversation, I'm like, what are we really talking about? Because some of it, we also play buzzword bingo. We got buzzwords for everything in education. And so like, get to the heart of like, what are we really talking about? And then let's be real. There's just some key differences in what people believe and how they should believe it. But as leaders, advocate, try and help them understand. You know, so much of my work right now with school and district leaders is really around communication. And we do all these kind of fun like activities and games and really, but to point down, communication is hard. And to get information in a way you understand into somebody else's mind in a way they understand they can actually do something about it. I mean, that's the heart of teaching and learning, but we have to communicate well. We see all the things that are happening out there. Sometimes we have to make sure that we're talking about it at that level of understanding. Hey, maybe I'm sitting with a bunch of business owners that think what we're talking about over here is crazy. But when we talk about, hey, we want kids in our community to have some opportunities. So when they come to you, they have the skills for your workforce. Like, that's a pretty good idea. But sometimes, because if they're getting all their ideas just from the latest news show and the bullet points from the talking show, they're coming in with this just jaded mindset. And sometimes it's just helping to educate them, helping to understand. And sometimes we just put up walls and then just pretend, okay, we hope we get enough votes that they don't matter. I don't think that's the way to solve it as a community, because they still pay your taxes. They still have a voice in your community. And as off and wrong as some of them we can look at that they are, sometimes we need to really bring them to the table, have some of those. I know that's much more of a local conversation, but I would say state, and it's interesting, at AllFred, we're actually going to be launching a state, like a state center for legislation, because what we've learned a lot of, you know, a lot of our state legislators are part-time, like they have other jobs. Yeah. A lot of our state legislators have like no staff because they have very limited budgets. And so they're voting on things that they don't really understand. They don't really know. They don't have a staff to do the research. So what we're working on at AllFred is creating a state policy center that creates some model legislation. Because what happens is, and not something I knew when I was a school or district leader, a piece of legislation will get introduced, let's say in California, they'll start to run with it, but somebody will say, give me the draft of that legislation, because we want to look at it over here in Oregon or over here in whatever, Connecticut, let's take a look. And so we're going to be working to create some sample legislations around some equity areas that are can be then replicated throughout other states to support legislatures in that. So with that, from a school and district leadership end, we're going to be looking for school and district leaders to be able to weigh in on that, voice some opinion, spread the word about those things. And so I would say you can be using your voice to just be cynical and out there. And when we see things like on Twitter and whatnot, you'll get those people that all they do is all they are is cynical. That's all they are. But it doesn't solve our problem. I either believe you're part of the problem or you're part of the solution. There's very little minimal ground, right? You're either standing up or you're sitting down. Like, there's really no in between, in my opinion. And so I think advocating, helping them understand at the end of the day, you know, when we're talking from a leadership end, you got to be able to put your head on the pillow at the end of the night. And if you're not doing what's best for kids, you're going to be losing sleep. And so how do I keep kids at the heart of my decision-making? Mm. Going back to other parts of your question, you know, and staying hyper-focused on your why, what's our purpose with this? Because if I know that the policies are inhibiting it, how do I look at it and say, okay, I'm going to advocate in my state capital to change some of those policies, but I'm going to also figure out, because a lot of times we also, just to be honest, from a human thought end, sometimes we create, and I don't want to dismiss the question because there's very real policies out there that need to change. But sometimes we'll look at things or we have this pre-understanding of what we think that is, and what we assume we can or can't do is sometimes wrong. Right. And so it's hard to innovate and push some of those limits if nobody else is doing it. I'll give you a quick example. When we launched so part of the reason that my original title, All for Ed, we also lead Digital Learning Day, you know, 13 mm-hmm. years ago, it was trying to make the case for technology in schools. Now it's really it's not used technology on one day. That is not the purpose of it. It's to highlight the great things that are happening. But here's the point. We created our own virtual program. This is when I was in a district. We created the program that I led, our own virtual program taught by our teachers using our content 14 years ago. This is not a COVID conversation.
Right.
So 14 years ago, like the whole COVID thing went in, I was having massive flat. How are we going to do this online? I'm like, huh, I think I've been there. So let me give you a state policy. Attendance, right? And so if you look at attendance, it's one of your most basic policies. The kid's there or they're not. The only thing attendance tells you in the world is the student on the campus on that day? That's the only thing it tells you. It tells you nothing about learning all these pieces. But in a virtual environment, what does that tell you, right? How do you monitor that? Right. So there's a case where I went to the State Department and I said, look, like your cyber schools, that's what they were called back in 2009, your cyber schools, the way they take attendance is, did the kid log in or not at that point in time? And I'm like, my dog can do that. We're going to do that differently. Yeah. So we're going to create pacing guidelines and we're going to do this. And we proposed it to them and said, this is what we're running with. Tell me how I'm wrong or how this is worse than what you already have in place. And I'll gladly step back. You can yell at me for permission. You can yell at me afterwards, but this is why this is better for kids. Cause I'm not just going to take the bottom line. Cause I don't believe in just saying, here's the basis. And then they're like, I gotta be honest. We don't really have a response because nobody's challenged us with this yet. And I said, okay, well, we just did. This is how I'm doing attendance. Mm-hmm. And so that was a case where fight for what you need to, do what you need to. And I will go on the hill of dying if I know that, hey, this is going to be, now I'm not talking about doing anything illegal on that end, but a lot of times in those cases, we need to make sure that, you know, we're fighting for those policies, making sure that people absolutely know what it is, educating those around them, building some consensus as well, leveraging other districts, other leaders to continue to create a ruckus to say, we need to change this for our kids because it's what they need and it's how we can help. And absolutely. So you do what you can inside the box until you can break out of the box.
Absolutely. And Tom, thanks for that, because yes, vote, right? That is so, so critical when we think about it. But Tom, control the controls. Wow. I mean, that is like at a simplistic form, control what we can control and continue to advocate and use the voice for communication. Educating stakeholders, right? That is huge. But there were two statements that was really resonating with me. And this is why, Tom, you know, your work is just fascinating. They were both focused on kids. What is best for kids and keeping kids at the core and molding consensus around children, students at the core. I mean, Tom, when you think about changing policy, when you think about at the LEA level, right? The local education agency level, the state education agency level, right? If we just keep kids at the core, I think policy alignment, language implementation would be different. And what All for Ed is doing, providing best practices and anchor models, we're still speaking of education language, right? Providing anchors and providing models to at the state and federal level to really look at policy different. Tom, that is definitely impactful work, influencing the change, the needed change in education. And you're right about our legislators, right? Educating them, right? Just giving them that foundational knowledge, because again, you know, having that staffing is important to do the core research and to be able to really convey that in for core, I like to say core meta themes to the legislature, so they know what they're voting on, but they're so shorthanded. I know a lot of my fraternity brothers that are the, you know, state legislators, and they just, you know, it's just them and they're going through a multitude of policies. So thank you for that, Tom. And now this is the purely selfish question. I did this for my audience because I got Tom Murray here. So this is me just being purely selfish, because I want my audience to get at least 2 to 5 minutes of just what everybody knows about you. I consider you one of the best motivational speakers in the country. I know Inky will say something different. Joe D might say, Ken might come on and be like, Mike, what you talking about? But I know I'm going to take heat for that, okay? Especially from them. Eric, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Eric. But I want my audience to actually just hear you. 5 minutes of just motivation around difficult times within our leadership and personal journey, right? I've been seeing so many Be Kind shirts. I've been seeing so many Be Kind advertisements, because it is true. We don't know what people are going through during their personal journey. They put on the mask in the leadership journey, but do we really know what's going on in the personal journey? Do we really know the personal journey compounded by being a leader in the AC stage of education? And we know what we have to do in the AC stage of education as leaders, going back to that first song, staying alive, right? So now having both of those factors being compounded, right, in our personal and leadership journey, what advice do you have for my listeners today about just being personal and authentic with themselves during the time in education? And if we're experiencing personal challenges, Tom, because I know you helped me out a little bit, brother, and I appreciate you, what are some strategies to push through so we make progress?
This is definitely my favorite question that you've asked. And I'm thinking, do we have 2 hours, right, to dive into that? So let me start by sharing just a glimpse. And I know I shared this with your staff. It's part of personal and authentic in a way that I go about helping. You know, one of the things when I speak, I'll put a slide up, and it's, you know, in the past 14 months, the child you're about to walk into your classroom or walk into your school, they've been absent 35 times. They've been tardy 20 times. And I asked them to process. I said, so you're going to get this student. The only thing that we know is is the attendance information. They're coming in from out of state. You'll get the academic stuff the next day. But what you know, you're looking at in the last 14 months, it's been 55 days or absence or tardy. What judgments might people make? And I always say, it doesn't mean you're going to make the judgment. It doesn't mean you're going to do anything different, but it might cross your mind a little bit about the kid, about the parents. Okay, go. And they've got about 30 seconds, and I'll bring them back. And I've asked this question to thousands of educators. And so here's what comes out. You know, the kid's lazy, kid doesn't care, kid doesn't value education, probably a behavior issue, going to be academic gaps, lots of issues at home. Let's go to the parents. Parents are a mess. Parents don't care. Parents don't value education. Parents are disconnected. Parents don't, and they go on and on and on. And then I pause and say, let me tell you part of the story. And I go to the next slide, and it's the picture of my daughter. And I say, that's my daughter. And the room stops. And the room, like thousands of people, silent. Mm-hmm. And I'll say, can I tell you the story? What if I told you that in every one of those 35 absences, we were 2 hours from our home as my daughter was the first child in the Northeast to undergo this new food allergy therapy because we had almost lost her multiple times. The doctors had estimated she had about a 30-minute window. And I go on to tell, you know, what if I told you 19 of the 20 tardies, one, we were just late, sorry, like signed a paperwork, but 19 of the 20 tardies, we drove 2 hours from our home. She drove 10,000 miles. She spent 180 hours in a car. And every single time she would say, like, mommy or daddy, I really wish I could be in school today. And when I start to tell the journey and tell the story, what have I told you? We've almost lost my little girl multiple times that because of cross-contamination levels to sesame seeds. And what if I told you that little girl now eats 2,000 seeds a day in her daily dose to keep her safe? And I really work through that story, and it's a little bit of a tearjerker, but it goes from we judge so quickly. And one of the things I wrote in Personal and Authentic is, you know, the difference between making a judgment and having empathy is understanding the story. So we want to improve our data, improve how we understand the story, because then we can improve how to help somebody. And so we take a look. Here's the thing. Your brain is wired to judge. That's an inherent thing. Your brain is wired to make connections to previous experience, what it knows about the world around it. So it's trying to constantly figure out what's happening. So your brain is naturally wired to judge. Inherently, it's not a bad thing. We've used the word judge as a bad thing. Inherently, it's not a bad thing. How that judgment goes is what can become bad really quickly. And so point being, to your point there, I just shared part of her journey, and in understanding the story, the data now makes sense. And so I share all that to leverage. I call that the hidden stories within. You know, it goes to that adage of everybody, like you just said, is battling something that you don't know, and whoever may have originally said that. But I talk about the hidden stories within, and hidden doesn't have to be bad. It can be a really good thing. You know, maybe you're listening to this and you're going on a date tonight with your spouse and you're super excited, but nobody around you knows, right? But also maybe you're struggling today. Here you are leading a school district and your marriage is falling apart. And here you are, you're brilliant, but you're crumbling right here, right? And so with that, it's leveraging the hidden stories within. And do we choose to see the hidden stories in other people or just inside of ourselves? And it's why I believe we have to lead with an empathy lens. The recommendations that I have is get to know the stories. There's absolutely going to be far more stories that you'll never know. If you're a teacher that's listening to this, how do you get to know the stories of your kids? What does that look like? if you're a leader? How do you get to know the stories of your people? I mean, even if you take a look at it on your journey and you've got that person, that union president sitting across from you, and I shouldn't use that as an example, just one example, maybe they're the most negative person in the world, but here's the reality. At some point in time, somebody looked across the interview table and was like, that's the teacher I want.
Yeah.
What happened there? Yeah. There's a story there. So get to know the stories of people, number one. Number two, be vulnerable. Model vulnerability yourself. Stay humble. Nobody likes the person that's full of themselves and thinks they know all the answers. Stay humble and keep it real. Because here's the reality, and I share with teachers and admin all the time, if the people that look up to you look at you as the person that knows everything, knows every ounce of every content and every standard and every one of those pieces, if they look at you in that way, they can't relate to you.
Right.
They have no
right.
concept of what that feels like.
Right.
But the moment you keep it real, the moment you are willing to share a struggle, take their input and keep it moving forward, people will connect. And so our work is about people. This work is about loving and caring about kids. Be vulnerable, keep it real, get to know people's stories, because the journey is not easy personally and professionally, but together we're going to be stronger for it.
Absolutely. And Tom, I be honest with you, I had another question and I'm not even going to ask it because I want to end on that, because again, knowing the hidden stories. And when you immediately brought up the 35 absences and the 28 tardies, I was like, oh man, I know that for sure. I know that personal story for sure with you and the fight for that and the fight through that, Tom. I tell you, I admire you so much, brother. I admire you so much. I just want you in three words. Now I'm gonna ask a question. Three words, only three words, because I want that to be the mic drop, but just three words. What three words do you want my audience to take away from this podcast episode?
Three words. All right, here we go. Bold, humility,
yep.
and story.
Yes. Bold, humility, and story. And know the story, because the story will lead to this level of empathy, this level of vulnerability, right? Tom Murray, thank you so much, my brother, for coming on Voices for Excellence. I tell you, Tom, this is a very, very good time. I would say an opportunity for us to really have impact in education. Obviously, it's that I would like to say that tension, that creative tension between opportunity and challenge. And I think the work that's coming out of Future Ready Schools, Offer Ed, the work that or the message that you're conveying nationally is really going to impact education. And Tom, on behalf of my audience, man, thank you for coming on and thank you for that free knowledge right there, the last five, man, because I'm telling you, everybody's got to hear you talk, man. You, my audience, no lie, Tom had 95% of my staff crying, including me, right? Including me. So Tom, my brother, I love you, man. Appreciate you for coming on. Thank you for coming on the show today.
Absolutely. Much love back to you. And tune in next time for an even better episode with a better guest, Dr. Rosa Perez Isaiah. Love you, Rosa. My man, I appreciate the opportunity. Thanks for having me on. It was a pleasure.
Absolutely. And so if Tom, so Dr. Listen, Dr. Perez Isaiah, varsity, NBA national, right? If Tom says he's JV to her, I'm middle school basketball.
Just the warm-up, man. Just the warm-up, middle
school, man. I'm still learning the left-hand layup, Tom. And on that note, everybody, you know who our next guest is. Onward and upward. Have a great day.